All right, so as most of you know, this is a fundraiser for Fight Back News. Fight Back News is an extraordinary newspaper. It's been on the ground in Ferguson, in Baltimore, on the historic CTU strike, for the buildup and march against NATO in Chicago, for every step of Rasmiya Odeh's case, and it will also be there for the next step in the CPAC campaign, which is at 5 p.m. on Thursday, December 10th, here in Federal Plaza. And one of our speakers is going to talk more about that in a little bit. Fight Back News is a newspaper dedicated to reporting struggle. Yesterday marked the 46th anniversary of the murder of Fred Hampton by the Chicago Police Department. Though only 21 years old when he was killed, he left a legacy that has endured for several generations through fighters for social justice. He said, "If you dare to struggle, you dare to win." We carry this beacon of wisdom to the streets and see it burning in the hearts of those we are honoring here today. Many of us know that Thanksgiving is just a facade to cover up the terrorism, murder, rape, and displacement of Native people by white settlers. However, People's Thanksgiving was created 24 years ago to celebrate what we are truly thankful for, that there are people fighting back against injustice. With that in mind, I'd like to introduce Frank Chapman. Frank Chapman is a veteran of the Black Liberation Movement. He was the victim of wrongful imprisonment as a young man, and then, like Malcolm X, George Jackson, and countless others, became politicized in prison. His release was won through a political struggle led by Angela Davis. Through the 70s and 80s, Frank was the executive director of the National Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. In the past 5 years, he's returned to that work, leading the campaign of the Chicago Alliance to win an elected Civilian Police Accountability Council. This would amount to community control of the police, an idea first raised by the Black Panther Party over 40 years ago. Everyone, give it up for Frank.
Thank you. You want to be careful when the mic's on you. You might say something you didn't intend other people to hear. Okay, I'm going to do two things that I usually don't do. I took my hat off. I did that because I'm in church. And I put some glasses on. I hate glasses. But I can't see this statement without them. I did a prepared statement because it's a very important statement. When I'm speaking, I like to speak. I don't like to re-speak, you know. But sometimes it's necessary, and this is one of those times. So let me just say up front that as a Black Marxist-Leninist, I have decided to join the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. For the last 5 years, I have been a Marxist-Leninist without a Marxist-Leninist organization or party. For me, this is an unbearable contradiction, and I choose to dissolve it this evening. When I say we live in momentous times, I'm not being melodramatic. Think about it. In just a little over a year, we have seen the uprising against brutal police murders and repression in our communities rise to unprecedented levels of fight back and organized resistance. We have seen the movement against police crimes free Howard Morgan, former police officer shot 28 times by fellow officers. We have exposed the racist political frame-up of Rasmiya Odeh to millions while successfully winning her fight for bail. We have joined in united action the struggles of the Palestinian people to the struggles of Black people. We've written some new pages in the fight to unite the trade union movement with the struggle for Black liberation. And we have most recently witnessed the Chicago Teachers Union brave vicious racist attacks and pass a resolution endorsing the Chicago Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression's campaign for an all-elected Civilian Police Accountability Council, known as CPAC. And this is truly a reflection of the momentous times in which we live. A number of comrades in Freedom Road Socialist Organization helped lay the groundwork for the CTU resolution endorsing CPAC. I mention this because I know that they never seek recognition for the great work that they do in our movement. Another momentous event that has agitated into existence a more massive protest of Black people is the murder of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald. Nothing has precipitated the present political crisis in our city like the release of the incriminating video of the execution murder of Laquan. The release of this video has exposed to Chicago and the world the rotten core of the utter lack of police accountability under the present system. This provides the movement here with a unique opportunity to advance the fight for and win community control of the police. Unlike any other city in this nation, and because of the movement we have here, Chicago can bring about a systemic change that will help empower the people to hold the police accountable. In the electoral arena, we have seen the anti-capitalist sentiments of the working class find expression in the campaign of Bernie Sanders for president. But what Bernie is tapping into is more than just a hatred of bankers, the thieves of Wall Street, and the billionaire barons. He is also tapping into the emergence of a class-conscious workers' movement wanting and seeking a socialist solution to capitalist exploitation and racist and national oppression. The present so-called financial crisis of capitalism has created unspeakable economic inequality and social misery for countless millions of workers of every creed, color, and sexual orientation. The political crisis reflecting this economic collapse of capitalism is expressed in the government policies of budget cuts that increase the impoverishment of workers and tax breaks that further enrich the wealthy. We maintain that there is really no way out of this political crisis except the path of socialism. Capitalism had outlived its usefulness by the time Karl Marx and Frederick Engels wrote the Communist Manifesto in 1848. Why else would they write it? By this, I simply mean that the contradiction between socialized production and private appropriation was full-blown, and the material conditions in the more developed countries for the existence of socialism was present. I believe that the last 150 years of capitalism has largely been a history of the ruling class of capitalist society using all the institutions of government to impose upon humanity an economic system that perpetually creates poverty in the midst of plenty and plunders our whole planet to satisfy the greed of less than 1% of the human race. Capitalism today, like never before, is a dying order, incapable of relieving humanity of the problems of poverty, war, and genocide. And so its continued enforced existence is the greatest crime of all time perpetrated against the human race. I have decided to join the Freedom Road Socialist Organization because, as a Marxist-Leninist, I do not want only to be part of the struggle for black liberation, democracy, peace, and social justice. I do not want only to be reacting to the crimes of capitalism. I want to be fighting for the end of capitalism. We are a young organization, and we are subject to all the vagaries and errors of youth. However, being young and being willing to stand on the shoulders of the giants of the socialist movement who have preceded us, we also have the potential of seeing further and progressing further up the road to socialism. There is continuity and discontinuity in the historical development of movements. We must build on and defend our revolutionary heritage, and in going forward, we must always find the courage to break with foolhardy and cowardly mistakes that mock our revolutionary past and mar our vision of the future. We must seize the momentous times in which we live and boldly fight for socialism. Fortune favors the bold, and the future belongs to those who fight for it. Thank you.
Before I present our next presenters, I just want to let people know, if you're tweeting about the People's Thanksgiving, it's hashtag People's Thanksgiving without the apostrophe. So we have an award coming up, and before I present this award, I have to say how wonderful this organization is that I'm about to be speaking about, and that organization is FLY, Fearless Leading by the Youth. Fearless Leading by the Youth is one of the most important organizations in the city of Chicago. Founded in 2007, when tenants leading the housing struggles led by Southside Together, Organizing for Power, which is STOP, began discussing engaging their children in issues directly affecting youth. FLY's first campaign was prompted by outrage about violence, abuse, and neglect inside the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center, commonly known as the Audi Home. The Audi Home Project not only pressures the administration to establish humane conditions in the detention center, but also demands real community-based and restorative justice reforms of the juvenile justice system. FLY won some improvements in conditions and continues to push to shut down the Audi Home completely. In the summer of 2010, Damian Turner, a leader and co-founder of FLY, was shot and killed in crossfire of a drive-by. He was taken past the University of Chicago Hospital, only 3 blocks away to Northwestern Hospital, where he died. FLY's youth discovered that the reason he was taken so far is the lack of trauma centers on the South Side, and in particular, the greed and racism of the University of Chicago, the wealthiest and most powerful player in the area and one of the notorious for displacing the black community. In response to Damian's death, FLY launched a campaign to force the UFC to support a trauma center on the South Side. Through 5 years of relentless protest and work, including sit-ins, tent cities, occupations, road blockades, a 10-mile march, a construction site shutdown, and more, the Youth of FLY and the Trauma Center Coalition they built forced the powerful UFC into concessions, first into recognizing the need for a South Side Trauma Center, next to admitting a share of responsibility, then to raising the age on its pediatric trauma center, and finally to putting $40 million into the building, a trauma center at Holy Cross Hospital on 68th and California. Hundreds of lives, mostly black and Latino young lives, will be saved by this trauma center. But still, FLY is pressing for expanded trauma access on the southeast side as well, and the human right to health care for all people. We at the AAAN support FLY's campaigns and have worked closely with them on youth exchanges, bringing Arab and black youth together for education and the community. I'm honored to bring up my friends to accept this award. Please welcome Fearless Leading by the Youth, FLY. And the award is In Struggle, Award 2, Fearless Leading by the Youth, FLY, for those who dare to stand in a strong sun and cast a sharp shadow. Robert Moses, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you for this amazing food, for one. I'm so full. But something that is really important to us, especially in terms of the victory, right, is that everyone claims it, right? People showed up to our marches. People came out to our protests. People supported us through bond funds, through retweeting things, through sharing things, through just hashtagging things. And so we applaud all of you for supporting our work and following our leadership. And we got the trauma center together, right? So we should do a round of applause for that. FLY is a youth-led program, and it is led by, you know, some of the most beautiful black people you ever did see, as you can tell. Thank you. Everybody needs support, and so we're also very grateful to our allies, Matt and Alex, who always give us rides and take us where we need to go, and just do everything in between to support our work. And as some of you may know or have seen, FLY and has became a part of coalition with BYP 100 and Asada's Daughters and other youth organizations around this issue of Laquan McDonald, right? And so something that we want everyone to know is that we see this issue and the reason why we fight, same thing about the trauma center, all of it is about the the society that we live in, right? The white supremacist capitalistic society that we live in. And that's what we are committed to fighting, right? So whether it's through the issue of Laquan McDonald, or whether it's the issue through Ronnie Mann, who, for folks who don't know, is another murder that was captured on dash cam video, through which that video has been pushed to be released next week. And FLY will always be a part of fighting any injustice on the forefront for our people, and for especially for young people. And we just thank you all for continuing to follow our leadership and allowing us to be in community with you. So thank you.
All right. Up next, I want to introduce Lucretia Burtz. Since the uprising in Ferguson, Missouri, the youth movement has generated many new faces playing a leadership role in Chicago. Lucretia Burtz, youth organizer for the Chicago Alliance, is one of the best known. As part of the Alliance campaign for CPAC, she called for protests against IPRA, the so-called Independent Police Review Authority Board, when a whistleblower exposed them for their refusal to find police shootings unjustified. As part of Black Youth Project 100, Lucretia has been one of the main organizers for the fight for justice for Rekia Boyd, murdered by Chicago cop Dante Servin. Just last week, Lucretia stood before thousands at a CTU rally. She called on them to support the struggle for community control of the police, just as the Black Lives Matter movement has supported CTU's demand for an elected school board. This week, the CTU rose to that challenge, endorsing the Civilian Police Accountability Council legislation as a solution to the crisis that has erupted over the murder of Laquan McDonald. For all this, and for so much more, I am honored to present the Lucy Parsons Award to Lucretia Burtz for uncompromising efforts in the defense of Black people and all police crimes. Give it up for Lucretia!
I should note that I've only been an organizer for a year. And the most important lessons that I've learned aren't about how to plan better actions or how to create better policy. The most important lessons I've learned is that change starts with people, not the system. People created the system, people maintain the system. And even if we change the system, it goes right back to where it was when we don't change people. We see examples of this in the South with suppression of voters. We see examples of this with the killings of Black youth at the hands of police. And let's be clear, the police killing innocent people without hesitation and without consequence are public lynchings and acts of terrorism. But how did it get this bad? How could we progress just to go back to experiencing similar problems that we faced 50 years ago? I know the answer is not simple. Our problems are multi-layered. However, part of the reason that the change that we really want hasn't happened is because we forgot to change the people as we were trying to change the system. We forgot to educate the masses about what's wrong with the system. We forgot to demand that all people be held accountable for their role in the system. Part of the reason I like the Civilian Police Accountability Council ordinance, and the reason that I fight with the Chicago Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, is that it does just that. It changes our relationship to the system. It empowers community members to hold the system players accountable and to create a system that is more representative of the world we want to live in. But as we build up momentum to pass CPAC, how are we changing people? How are we holding each other accountable and empowering each other? These are questions that I think are vital to sustaining the movement. These are questions we should also ask ourselves. Thank you.
So the next speaker I will be presenting is very, very well known. She comes to every people's Thanksgiving. This People's Thanksgiving is a blessing to me, for especially this year, because last year's People's Thanksgiving, we were not fortunate to have this person attend. But today I thank God that she's here, and that's Rasmiya Oda. Last year it was really, really hard for me and my coworkers to come up there and accept the award, because it was a week after Rasmiya's trial, and unfortunately during that time she was in jail. But to the organizing of all of you guys and USPCN, we got her out before her sentence, we raised money, and that's what organizing does, and Lucretia touched on that, which is people power and having the people come along with you. Rasmiya has dedicated 40 years of her life to empower Arab women in her homeland of Palestine, and especially here at Chicago. And in Palestine and Jordan and Lebanon, she worked in refugee camps to help Palestinian women. Here in the Chicagoland area, Rasmiya has an Arab Women's Committee that she created and founded, and it has over 600 members, which are Arab immigrant refugee women that, you know, she creates a safe space for, and what they discuss is challenging patriarchy at the home and outside, and especially racism that, you know, these Arab immigrant women face, and closing the gap between them and their children. As you all know, on October 22nd, 2013, DHS knocked on Rasmiya's door at 6 o'clock in the morning, arresting her on a bogus charge of unlawful procurement of naturalization. The question is, again, why is the government looking at a 20-year-old immigration application? And we all know why, because Rasmiya is a Palestinian leader, and this country attacks the Palestinian community. But Rasmiya is my mentor. She is defiant. I love her. And I also want to note that I credit my Palestinian organizing to Rasmiya. I do come from a family that does Palestinian organizing, but it was Rasmiya who brought me into Palestinian organizing, and I am thankful for that. So if we could all give a round of applause for Rasmiya Oda.
Thank you. Thank you. Before I'm speaking, the organizer gave me just 7 minutes. I asked them 10 minutes. They allow me. So now, maybe I'll speak 15 minutes. I don't know. I'm so glad to be with you today to express how grateful and thankful I am for all the support, care, and endless love that every one of you has shown me, and for all the time and effort that you all have dedicated to the case and the fight for justice since my arrest in October 2013. I'm especially grateful for Fight Back newspaper, the Committee to Stop FBI Repression, and the Anti-War Committee in both Chicago and Minneapolis, who have raised money for the campaign and mobilized people for the hearings, trial, and appeal, and all the individuals and families who have pledged their businesses, properties, to pressure the judge to release me on bail before the sentencing, and the special friend who donated his life saving to get me out when the judge refused to accept the properties and asked for cash instead. I'm also thankful for all the leaders of my defense committee and the Arab community in general, who put the case as the number one political priority in their lives. Words cannot describe the strength that your support gives me, and it's your support that drives me to work for justice in our society. Palestinians encounter countless political challenges on a regular basis. Today's coalition led by Netanyahu is the most racist and right-wing government that Israel has ever had. Violent Zionist settler groups are supported by the right-wing government to terrorize Palestinians regularly. Settlers continue to create more horrific ways to brutalize and torture the Palestinian, like the story we all know about baby Ali Dawabsha and his parent burned to death by racist settlers. Just a few days ago, the court acquitted the killer by alleging he has mental illness. Of course, settlers are rarely prosecuted or punished for these crimes. We have also seen more settler violence against Palestinians in Al-Aqsa Mosque and other parts of Jerusalem, plus all across the West Bank. Government and settler collusion and policy not only pushes more Palestinians out of Jerusalem and the West Bank, but also out of 1948 Palestine as well. They are all victims of Israeli brutality and violence. Many Knesset and cabinet members have no problem making openly racist and hateful remarks against Palestinians. And some have even proposed that the Israeli government should make structural and institutional racism legal against the Palestinians in all sectors, like housing, education, labor, and civil and social services. This is the real face of Israel that the world now sees every day. Racism, apartheid, and white supremacy, the racism that years of negotiation have been a huge failure, is because Israel continuously demand recognition as an exclusive Jewish state, which goes against all notions of equality and democracy, against our Palestinian rights of return, self-determination, and independence. These are rights that cannot be negotiated and are basic rights that we will never give up. The Zionist old dreams is not satisfied with geographic, political, and economic control of Palestine alone. But also, there's an old dream to expand and control the area from River of Egypt and to the Euphrates. According to the father of Zionist Theodor Herzl, he said, the area of Jewish state stretches from the Brook of Egypt to the Euphrates. Also, according to Rabbi Fiskelman, the promised land extends from the River of Egypt up to the Euphrates. It includes part of Syria and Lebanon. I want to show you this map. Palestine, historical Palestine, is this short, small area. This is the historical Palestine, the small one. But the dream of their country, all these black parts, include Syria, part of Syria, part of Iraq, part of Lebanon, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Jordan. Israel society criminalized and dehumanized Palestinians similarly to the way U.S. society criminalized and dehumanized black people. Palestinian under Israeli occupation and the black in the U.S. are facing similar oppression and a relentless war against young people. Both communities continue to face racism and violence expressed in the speed of tear gas and hit buttons and bullets that pierce their bodies. This oppression is rooted structurally in both laws and institutions as well as the collaboration between the U.S. and Israel, like the training of U.S. police officers by the Israeli military. These strategies seek to cage us and try to destroy our will to resist and fight for freedom and justice. The crimes of police brutality, especially against black people in the country, are almost identical to what we experience in Palestine from the Israelis. In addition, we see similarities in the racist nature of legislation, court, education, law enforcement, military, and every aspect of Israeli and U.S. society. Palestinians clearly recognize the similarities. We know the anger, the outrage, and the motivation to rise up against racist law enforcement policies that push our communities to the margin of humanity. Repeatedly and with extreme difficulty, we learn of hate crime motivated by racism in this country, such as the Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyck, who shot Laquan McDonald 16 times, impeded gun into the teen's body in cold blood. The false allegation that this knife was a threat mirror almost exactly what the Israelis say about young Palestinians, that they execute in cold blood, in cold blood. It's these false allegations that are used to repeatedly imprison black people in the U.S. and Palestinian in Palestine. These crimes and other cover the years reflect the extreme hate, racism, and national oppression that African American, Latino, Arab, Muslim, Asian, and other face in this country. But the attacks are not just from bad cop or individual racists. They are encouraged and supported in many political and media circles, and they make us out into uncivilized criminals to support their political agenda. This is why we talk and continue to develop our joint struggle, why our responsibility is to support each other's struggle and the struggle of those oppressed in this country, in Palestine, and all over the world. Together we can form a strong unity which can act as an ideal tool to force the people in power to respond to our demands for justice and equality in the application of the law and other various aspects of life. I'm always thinking about people like us, people who have dedicated our lives to social justice in the U.S. and beyond. Together, we become stronger and more effective. This is not easy. But as long as we believe in our rights and the principle that we stand for, have confidence in ourselves and rise up together, then we can achieve miracles. I repeatedly assure that we Palestinian and Arab stand in unqualified solidarity with brave black community members and group like those being honored here today. who are rising up against every instant of vicious police violence in this country, the same way my people have dedicated their lives to the liberation of Palestine. And these connections make me think over and over about the most important social justice struggle of the day. Maybe the most important social justice struggle that I have ever experienced here in the U.S., the struggle for black liberation in this country. Liberation that will lead to positive change for the sake of every single person in this country and beyond. And lastly, I want to thank again everyone here and remind you all, organizations, organizers, friends, supporters, and leaders of my defense committee, that my case is not over yet. We are confident that we will win the appeal. But even if we lose, we will continue the fight for my justice. I still need your effort and your support. Fundraising, educational events, publishing articles, and other media work. The fight for justice in my case is a part of our broader fight for justice for all. Your support and commitment means everything to me. Thank you again, and I wish you all the very best. Thank you.
Thank you. So up next, I am very excited. I have somebody who's my friend from out of town who's going to come up and help me present the next award, Dan Ginsberg. He is with the United Workers Organization of Milwaukee, who have been working in solidarity with the Kohler worker strikers.
Hey, everybody. Happy holidays. I'm really happy to be here. My name is Dan Ginsberg. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm a rank-and-file member of the Teamsters Union and a founder of the United Worker Organization, and I've come down here with other members, founders of the United Worker Organization. If you guys and gals all raise your hands, and Tracy. So, you know, it's a special organization. You know, brother Corey Oliver here is a member of Amalgamated Transit Union. He's a bus driver, a member of a union that just held a successful 3-day work stoppage to stop part-time work from being introduced into their workforce. Brother Cash Schwartfeger and Daniel Williams, Denoit? I don't know, his Facebook name is one or the other. Are involved in the historic Vote No campaign that rejected a concessionary contract from UPS and fought back cuts to health care and fought for our pension. So I guess I'm not up here to talk for too long, because I'm actually supposed to introduce a brother from Kohler, but real quick, I just want to say what the UWO is, the United Worker Organization. We drew inspiration first, mostly, I think our founding was from the Republic Windows and Doors occupation here in Chicago, when hundreds of window manufacturers, instead of taking a layoff and letting the company close, actually fought back and occupied their factory, and we came down from Milwaukee to show solidarity with that. We have also, since then, we really cut our teeth with labor organizing, fighting back against Act 10, when Governor Scott Walker tried to abolish, essentially, public sector unions in Wisconsin. Hundreds of thousands of people occupied and swarmed our state capitol for weeks on end, and that's really where we got founded from. Since then, we've led the protest movement against right to work in Wisconsin. We supported the Palermo's pizza workers, who are all kicked out of their factory. The makers of Costco pizzas are in Milwaukee, and they were kicked out for trying to organize a union. We've also obviously worked with ATU, and now we're here for something very special, working. So since November 16th, over 2,000 workers have been walking the picket line in Kohler, Wisconsin. manufacturers of bathroom products and many others. I'm sure you've all heard of Kohler before. UWO supports this struggle. We support what's called class struggle unionism. It's essentially old school unionism. It's what the Kohler workers used in 1934 when they fought to form a union, the United Auto Worker Local 833. They were in a bitter battle. Actually, two workers were killed at that strike. About 40 were injured when the National Guard opened fire on them. In 1954, they had to fight again for their union and defend it in what's the longest strike in U.S. history. And they're at it again today, fighting back. So it's a significantly important strike that we hope that most people are following. If you're reading Fight Back News, you're probably very familiar with it by now. This isn't, you know, there's space in the labor movement for a lot of activity. There's the Fight for 15 and symbolic strikes, a three-day work stoppage, but this is really significant because this is over 2,000 workers in just a watershed, non-ending strike. This could go on for months, and they need your solidarity. They need people to go up to Kohler. They need people to donate to the strike fund. They need people to walk the picket line. It's going on 24/7, practically 7 days a week. So make sure you get up to Kohler. You'll be warmly received. So that's enough. I'm going to introduce Eric Caney. He's a 21-year Kohler worker. He's a strike captain, a steward, and the head of the education committee for United Auto Worker Local 833. So it's a great honor to have you here, brother. You can come up here and let us know what's going on up in Kohler.
How many people have been part of a labor union in here? So Kohler, it's very historical strikes that we've had. 1934, two men were shot in the back while picketing. No one was ever charged for it. And I just read an article on that just this morning about that. The big strike that everyone still talks about in where I come from is the big 9-year strike in the 50s. That was huge, big to the labor movement. We got pictures all over our union hall related to that. We had a small strike in 1983, which had to do with the tier system that we kind of have now. 12 years later, we were able to eliminate that tier system. And now, in 2010, we had a 5-year contract. We got no raises, yet our insurance still went up. All of our benefits got worse, and no extra pay. All of our bills got higher, and it just wasn't a real great contract, but the economy was bad, and the company took advantage of it. Now we are on 5 years later in 2015, and it's tough to say you don't want to be working right now. Christmas is here. You want to be making money. Our contract was November 15th, and before that contract, 99% said we are willing to strike. We're behind the bargaining committee. We will stick with you. When the contract came up, we still had this tier system. Back in 2010, we implemented the tier system, but there was nobody at the lower tier. Nobody at all. A year went by, there was still nobody at the lower tier. We weren't too concerned. All of a sudden, a couple started trickling in, and they're working in a foundry, making about $11, $12 an hour. It's hard to describe what our cast iron foundry is like. You basically walk in, and there's flames over here. Everybody's dirty, and they're black, and some aren't wearing shirts because it's just so hot in there. They make the castings for our bathtubs in the Kohler. So they were making 65% of what the top tier pays, and they took their benefits away. They even said that your life isn't as worth as much as the guys that are making tier A wages, and you only get 65% of the life insurance if you were to die on the job. That's just how the whole thing was set up. We didn't think it would affect anyone, but now we're working side by side with these guys. 80% of the people are still on tier A, and we have about 400 of our 2,000 members now making tier B wages. We work side by side with them, do the exact same work. And we understand that it takes a little while of training before you're going to get your full pay, but these people can never, ever get up to the top pay. And that's a trend that's going on around the country. There's laws against discrimination and everything with pay, equal work, equal pay. But then all of a sudden now it's not illegal to say, oh, if you start after this date on the calendar, you're not worth as much. You're going to make less money. And what the Kohler did is 65%, and there's no gain ever. They're always going to be at 65%. Now that we're working side by side with these people, with the employees that are they're at the 65%, even though only one fifth of the employees are actually under that second tier, 94% actually voted against the contract. So the tier A guys were really looking out for the tier B guys. We have kids, we have grandchildren. I just became a grandfather again a couple weeks ago. But I just can't see that someday that my child or grandchild is going to work side by side with me and the company's going to say that they're not worth as much as what you're doing, even though they're doing the same amount of work as what I would be doing. And by then I'll be old and I'll probably be doing actually way less work than what they're doing. But yeah, that's just one of the problems we have. Kohler, if you don't know what Kohler is, it's kind of right between Milwaukee and Green Bay. It was about a three-hour drive to get here. It's a village. It's the village is named after the company. The company was actually really there first. It only has 2,001 people, but yet there are 2,000 union members that work at the company, and there's an extra 3,500 that work in the offices. Before the recession, there were over 12,000 people working at Kohler with about 3,600 of them that were union. Now we've decreased we've gotten back up to 2,000 people. We make all kinds of products from engines to generators. The company actually started when someone saw a trough for horses. They put some legs on it and they called it a bathtub. And that's how Kohler kind of started. We make lots of brass fixtures and faucets and urinals and toilets a big variety of products. We have our own pottery and foundry and enamel shop. And it's like seven or eight different sections, but we're all one union. We all stick together. And being on strike, although it's a humbling experience, you don't have a job. You're not making any money. But, boy, solidarity. We just sang the solidarity song before. And, oh, my, if you've never been in a strike, in this day and age, you can really come together. People that we have never seen before, you're now picketing side by side, and you're hearing about their stories. You're hearing about people on the Tier B wage that are actually still collecting food stamps and getting medical assistance from the state because they can't make it on their own income. So it's been a tough struggle out there, but we've been really sticking together. The community, this hasn't really happened in other strikes of Kohler, but in our strike now, the community has really gotten behind us. Kohler Company was worth about $3 million in 2010. We took no raise, paid more for our insurance and everything, and now Kohler is worth $7.5 billion because of the concessions that we took, partially because of the concessions we took. Kohler is a global company. They do have places in China, and every time they think we're going to strike, they say they can threaten that we're going to send it down south, we're going to send it to Mexico, China, anywhere else. We've opened the market in South America, and I'm sure they'll find another bottom after that. Let's see, where was I going to go with this? So we're on the picket lines. The community has been fantastic. Social media this is the first time we've used social media in a contract. The entire membership has been able to stay educated. They know exactly what's going on. They knew exactly what was coming in that contract, and they knew to stick together to make this work. And now we're out there. It's cold. It's that time of year. We're lucky it's a little warmer than most winters, but we are really sticking together. And that's what this is really all about. People are coming by every single day with food. We're getting to eat every day from the community, and the company doesn't like it that much, but we're definitely struggling through, and we think we're gonna win. It's tough to win in this time of society now, the way it all is. Strikes are tough to win, but we're all together. We out of the 2,000 people, we've had about 13 people have crossed the line. Yep, it's bad, and it's very unfortunate. But it's kind of humorous hearing the stories from those 13. Actually, they're kind of telling us what's going on in there with management trying to run these machines. It's almost laughable what they're doing in there. You can imagine how your bosses would be able to do your job. Probably not really good. Here we got a big iron foundry where we could blow the roof off the place if they mess up, and a lot of safety issues in that built in those. But 125-year-old company, and let's see what we can do. Thank you.
On behalf of myself and all the other organizers of this event, we are extremely honored to have you here. You've made this not only a multi-state event, which is exciting, Midwest People's Thanksgiving, but for bravely standing up to the boss, that is, sorry, I'm going to swear for a second, badass. So we would like to present you with the Big Bill Haywood Class Struggle Award. The working class and the employer class have nothing in common. So thank you so much.
All right, thank you, brother, and Michelle as well, Sister Michelle, for coming down from the strike lines up in Kohler. My name's Joe Osbaker, and I'm up here to do something that has to be done, which is an old comrade has said to me, and Frank Chapman has repeated this as well, anytime you get more than five people together, you gotta pass the hat. That strike that's going on in Wisconsin is a strike that the working class in this country cannot lose. You understand how long it has been since the union movement in this country was on a class struggle basis? It's been since I was a little kid. These brothers and sisters are standing up, and we have to show them some love. So there's a couple of brothers here who've got baskets. There's one on the north side of the room, and there's one on the south side of the room. And we're going to start like this. This is just like being in church, okay? Will anyone donate $100 to support this strike and continue to have these people's Thanksgivings as well? We're going to split it with them. But we're going to start with asking for $100. Anybody in the room willing to pitch in $100? There's one hand right there. There's a hand over here. All right, we're going to let the baskets go to these people. I'm going to hang on to this number just for one more minute. Come on, brothers and sisters. This Kohler strike is the most significant strike happening in the country. In fact, it's perhaps the most significant strike that's happened in years. This is not a public sector strike. These workers are shutting down production. They are costing these bastards millions of dollars a day. And they're giving up their paychecks and their comfort in order to do this. We've got to keep this going. So one more time, can I get any other $100 contributions out of this room? Thank you, brother. Right over here, the basket's got to go to him. And then two more over here. Keep it going. This is working. I'm going to hang on to this for one more try. Any more $100 contributions in the room? All right, how about $50 contributions? $50. There's one over there. Thank you, Brother Steve. We got to keep these going. Any more $50 contributions in this room? There's one right here, and there's one back there, and there's one over here as well. This is what I'm talking about. We got to send these workers home with a nice fat envelope. This is the Chicago way. They come to Chicago, you give them an envelope of cash. All right, brother, is there a way to contribute online with credit cards? You can go to the event page for this, either on YouCaring or on Facebook. You can make your contribution there and just have a note in it that it's meant for the Kohler workers. All right, any more $50 contributions? There's one more $50 contribution over here. You got to run over here to get him? Okay. There's someone over here with money that no one is getting from. So one last chance on the 50. You want to be able to say, I gave money $50 right back there in that corner. You want to be able to say that the Kohler strike was going on and I stepped up. I gave a large donation, as much as I could. There's another donation over here. Thank you, sister. So there's a $40 donation from our brother Michael Sacco, who's been around labor solidarity struggles for a little while. Okay, he's good for 40. Anybody else gonna do 40? That's two 20s. Come on, that's a couple of dinners. There's another 40 back there in the back. That's what I'm talking about. And there's one over here as well. Any more? And another 40. Excellent. We got to keep these baskets. Keep those hands up, because the basket guys are having a hard time getting through all the crowded tables. All right, brothers and sisters, I want to say that this is a beautiful expression of solidarity. And I just want to tell you one more thing. 5 years ago, the FBI raided some of our houses, targeting us under a ridiculous witch hunt for our anti-war activity. And this newspaper that we publish, the Fight Back News, it's an online news service, and we have a print edition that publishes five times a year. You can get print copies back at the literature table in the corner. This newspaper was one of their targets. The FBI doesn't like it, does not like it, when working people and the oppressed come together and struggle against the existing social order. By being here tonight, by making your contribution at the door, and by digging in so that we in turn can help support the Kohler workers, you're essentially telling the FBI that you refuse to be silenced as well. And I want to thank you for your beautiful solidarity. Thank you again.